How good you are as a caregiver is not based on how little screen time your child has.
Before you think, oh, this is going to just be like another screen time episode about how like we shouldn't give screens to our kids.
It's not.
Drop all that. Kids deserve downtime.
When we say that, what we're, I think, idealizing is that they will be like taking out the blocks and the Lego and making a fort in the living room and everyone's doing pretend play. And it's like this idealized perfect version of what will happen when a kid is like bored, but doing things purely for enjoyment, even if they aren't producing something, is still worthy of doing.
We have traveled here to be here in person. My family's off somewhere in the city, in our office, and I do not dare look at the amount of like screen time hours on their iPad for the past week, because I think it'll be off the charts.
Mm. Can I ask you first, though, how do you feel about that?
Trying not to feel guilty. No, actually, I think I am able to let it go a little bit. I think because I know that once we are back home, it will all even out again, because this is outside of our normal. Mm-hmm. And this is what works well for them, for us, for the other people working at the studio. So this is a good solution.
They're happy. They're like, oh my God, yes, we get to play. Honestly, my morning started with Cars too, because I have a sick kid and the other one's like, can I watch Cars? I'm like, absolutely you can. Great idea.
Let's
actually
go.
Thank you for suggesting.
It's already
that.
On.
And I feel so good about it because it let us go about our morning with peace. And it was exactly what we all needed. And this is why we literally coerced Ash into coming here, because we just had to unpack this with them, because it is the most important topic of our generation, how we navigate technology and screens with our children. Hard stop. And Ash is not only an educator, but also an expert in all things games, technology, and screens. And so we are overjoyed that Ash got on an airplane on a whim when I was like, hey, do you want to do this in person at the very last second? And flew all the way to Toronto to talk to us about screen time and how we're raising our kids. Before you think, oh, this is going to just be like another screen time episode about how like we shouldn't give screens to our kids.
It's not.
Drop all that, because this is really about empowering parents to feel good. Just let that sit, like good about screens, not just comfortable and okay with them, but how we can navigate life and actually feel wonderful about the decisions we're making around technology and screens in our own family homes. Ash is going to unpack that all with us today. It is a juicy one, so stick around. There's so much to talk about today. I'm really excited. I really want to just start the conversation by asking you a question, which is, how did you end up becoming an expert in all things screens and gaming for kids?
I guess it was a slow evolution over time. I feel like I became knowledgeable in them the way lots of us and lots of kids do, which is like I just grew up with them as part of my life. And I didn't really think of it as a big deal until I was an adult, realizing that I viewed them a little bit differently than other adults when it came to things like video games. They were part of my life and I enjoyed them, but they weren't the only part of my life. And to me, that was just, I don't know, the way you have balance with all the things. So when I had students that were interested in video games, I was able to connect with them over that, because I understood what that was like, even if we didn't like the same things, just like I can bond with someone over sports if we don't like the same sport. And I felt really comfortable with figuring out kinds of games or technology because they were something I had my own experience with. So when COVID began, I realized that the other ways I'd been in community around things like this just weren't going to happen because they were in person. And that was when I kind of pivoted into social media and realized pretty quickly that a lot of the people that were coming toward me were caregivers who were feeling like they didn't know what they were supposed to be doing and they felt kind of unsure. And even being able to be curious about technology and figure things out, I realized was something that not all adults have comfort with, especially when it comes to kids. And so I was able to speak to that with my own comfort with these kinds of parts of our lives, but also being an educator and coming from education, feeling comfortable with making and creating boundaries and management, since that's a lot of what educators do in their day-to-day life. So just this sort of organic thing that happens.
And look at you now.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, when you meet adults and talk through like, who are you as a person? I mean, first of all, the first question is like, what do you do for a living?
Right.
Which still makes me itchy, because we're so much more than the work we do. But right. when you talk about gaming or technology with other adults, what is that like?
I guess it kind of depends on the person or, you know, how we're kind of getting to know each other. But I feel like with people who also enjoy technology or video games, they very much understand that it's one part of our lives and it's a hobby among many others. And I feel like sometimes conversations with people who maybe don't come from that same relationship with technology, sometimes it feels like it has to get kind of couched in like explanation.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm interested in this thing, but I also am interested in these other things. And I think that's one of the ways we all kind of fall into the trap of feeling like certain parts of our own lives or our kids' lives, when it comes to things like leisure, certain things are better than other things. Mm. And that was a big part of, I think, why my page, like the Gamer Educator, as well as my book, kind of ended up happening, because I realized that we had to kind of speak to the core idea that it's okay to have these things in our lives that we enjoy just because we enjoy them. And it's okay to have that kind of enjoyment in our lives or in kids' lives just for fun. Like, we all kind of deserve that fun. So I feel like there's times where I'm speaking with other adults that maybe have not had that in their lives for a while, where I kind of want to be like, it's fun. You get to have fun.
Yeah,
you deserve to have fun. Yeah.
I feel like we tend to, as adults, I feel like a lot of people in our generation actually grew up with a lot of screen time and not a lot of boundaries surrounding that. Because when I was a kid, like, there were no boundaries surrounding the TV, and I didn't watch TV all the time. I had many other hobbies, but at the same time, like, TV wasn't an issue. And I think, like, it was the same for a lot of people of our generation. And then when we grew up, we have this tipping point where it became all about the phones and the computers. And it was part of the digitization process where it became so ingrained in our lives, with a bunch of like identity stuff becoming like, or like identification, I suppose I should say, with the government, with your work life. Like, we've kind of lost a balance there. And I feel like a lot of adults are now projecting that kind of fear onto their own kids in a way. How do you see that? Do you feel like we've lost that balance, or are we all just collectively overreacting?
When you talk about looking back at our own childhoods and seeing that actually related to screen media a lot, where we were inundated with it or we were using it a lot, I was thinking about that a lot this summer, because there were a lot of, especially on social media, like calls of like, give your kid a 90s summer. Yeah. And I'm like, a 90s summer for me meant like 6 hours of television.
Yes.
And like no supervision. And I actually had parents at home in the summer who, because they were educators, but they still were like doing things. And I was kind of doing whatever. And a lot of that was the television.
Yeah.
Or even if it was just casually on in the background.
Yeah.
Right. And I wasn't necessarily directly engaging with it, but it was still on and there wasn't a lot of regulation. And I feel like current generation of parents in some ways have it the hardest, because we can think back on our own childhoods and think back about how, in some ways, we didn't have as many, there wasn't as much pressure on caregivers in terms of like regulation of TV or things like that. They didn't really have to. You know, if something was on television, you could trust it was generally appropriate, maybe not always best for the person in front of the TV, but it was still going to be okay, you know, for a general audience. And we've lost some of the regulation, like the protection that regulation brought to our lives as kids. We're able to look back at that and go, okay, well, I didn't really have a ton of regulation in my own childhood, but now I can't even go back to that as an adult, because that like base doesn't exist anymore. If our kids are mostly engaging with like streaming media,
you
know, there isn't that kind of baseline expectation. So now our own expectations for ourselves as parents, I think, are higher, because we recognize, oh, okay, maybe there was less regulation than there should have been for my own parents or my own adults in my lives. So now I have to bring that to my kids. But also now I can't even trust the bare standard, because it doesn't exist. So now I'm having to like figure that out actively all the time, and also put in these limits.
So tiring.
Yes, yes. That's so much labor that like absolutely shouldn't be falling on caregivers. And I think in some ways you could probably look back and draw a through line and see that, you know, we had obviously some amount of broadcast standards and regulations, but then as the media changed, the regulations aren't changing with it. And so over time, we see these things that naturally push on the boundaries of what the limits are. And so then we end up with media that maybe exceeds some of those limits as they were intended, but hasn't like caught up. And it makes sense that we feel all of that pressure, but yeah, it shouldn't be falling on us. It should be things that are, we should be having those safeguards around regulation from companies, much like we did when we were growing up, even if they were flawed. So now that's falling on caregivers. I think that that, along with the pressure of, you know, just being more present in our kids' lives and making sure that we're not distracted by our own devices, that just puts a lot of, it's a lot of competing pressures. Yes. It makes caregivers feel like they can't win, I think.
It does feel kind of like we can't win. Mm-hmm. I think there's the guilt, the shame, the judgment, mm-hmm. and then your own relationship to technology and how that affects how you parent a child through their relationship with technology. You've talked a lot about how screens and games are a family, not issue. That's the wrong word.
Family matter.
Mm-hmm. Walk us through it.
Well, so I have sort of three main tenets that I often refer back to in all the work I do. And they are screen time is a social inequity issue, which is kind of what you're hinting at, I think. And then screens can be a part of our lives without being the center of our lives. And also that screen time should benefit the whole family. And there's a reason that that's like also in the subtitle of my book, because if we're going to be talking about screens in relationship to kids, it's just unrealistic to not think of caregivers in that equation, because often whether or not screen time is happening or how it's happening is being decided through the caregiver. And so if we aren't considering and sometimes centering the caregiver, then we're not actually going to be able to find something that's very sustainable for many caregivers. And for many reasons, many good reasons, I think many of us, when we think about our kids and screens, we think about wanting to minimize that or wanting to make it as good as we can. And that's a good endeavor. But I think we try to do that by sacrificing ourselves and thinking, oh, if I can just minimize their screen time by giving more of my own capacity, that's somehow the best outcome. But anyone who's done that too much has seen that that ends up backfiring, right? If I am giving of myself continually and I don't have other things to help fill in, well, eventually that reserve is going to run out.
Yeah.
So the example I use a lot is in thinking about a single caregiver or the only caregiver in a home at any given time trying to, you know, make dinner. And if option one is we're having microwave chicken nuggets for the third night in a row because I don't want my kids on a screen and I have kids running around and I can't boil water because I don't want to hurt anyone and I'm frustrated. And then I'm sitting down at the table and snapping at everyone that we need to sit down and eat. Like if that's option one, but there was no screen involved, is that really better than my kids are doing something on a screen for 30 minutes and I'm decompressing and making a meal we couldn't have otherwise. And then we're sitting down at a table feeling calm and present. In my mind, the second example is a benefit to kids because they're getting a more regulated and present parent and they're also getting downtime, which is also okay.
Yeah.
So I think we have to consider how adults fit into what we're making decisions for our kids because we are going to impact our kids, and it's okay to consider ourselves when we're also considering other people in the family.
I want to talk about downtime because in your book, you've talked a lot about leisure and how those things are so important. And you touched on it a little bit already, but can we just kind of go down that rabbit hole for a few minutes?
Sure.
Tell us a little bit more of the context around this concept of like, and this is so funny. It's almost like I'm saying something crazy, like kids should smoke cigarettes or something. It's just like kids deserve downtime. Mm-hmm. Hard stop. Tell us about that.
Yes. I think a lot of people, when they hear that, like kids deserve downtime, will probably say like, well, of course. But if we were to prod on what is downtime?
Reading.
Right.
Right. Like everyone goes to reading. Go read a book.
Yeah. Reading or like quote unquote, like time to be bored. When we say that, what we're, I think, idealizing is that they will be like taking out the blocks and the Lego and making a fort in the living room and everyone's doing pretend play. And it's like this idealized perfect version of what will happen when a kid is like bored. I mean, yes, it's downtime and yes, it can be leisure, but I think many adults see that as honestly not leisure. They see it as like productivity of like, this is what a kid should be doing. Mm-hmm. It looks like that struck a chord for you there, Esther.
It really did, because like it, even as someone who is so pro games and so pro like my kids having downtime, I still make that divide between go play and like it's so great to be bored because you get to be creative and come up with all these new things. And sometimes my kids are just like, just let me watch a bit of TV. I'm so tired.
Right. Yes. Right. And that sometimes when you're bored, you go into a great creative place. And sometimes when you're bored, you read a book, and sometimes you stare at the wall, and sometimes you just want to like kind of be fed things to think about. Like you read up books. If someone were like, oh, I don't want to think and be creative, I'll read a book. We wouldn't pathologize that. We wouldn't be concerned about that. Even if that was something we were doing all the time, we still probably would be like, oh, it's great that they want to read all the time. But doing things purely for enjoyment, even if they aren't producing something, is still worthy of doing. And that's true for us as well, that we all deserve leisure. And we all have experienced what happens if we don't kind of have that you end up kind of seeking it wherever you can get it. And at least for me personally, I end up finding that it doesn't feel as satisfying. You know, if I'm trying to grasp at a few moments of, oh, I haven't had a break, quick, I'll like scroll my phone, but that doesn't really feel good either. So if it could just all be filled in by some intentional framing of leisure, is like, it's okay that I want to, I don't know, watch a movie and just watch a movie.
Yes.
I think otherwise we're going to try and get it somewhere and then it becomes not quite enough. Whereas if we're just framing it as this is a part of our day and it's important to have this just like other parts of our lives, we don't have to try to be productive of every moment. And kids, I think that applies to kids too when it comes to more like academic kinds of leisure. It's okay if they're playing an app or using the iPad, so long as it is academic or educational.
Yeah.
Or they're but reading a book.
That's also like, it's more to ease our own guilt about it.
Than yeah, that's than for the parents, I feel.
Oh, yes.
Like, because kids will, I'm a firm believer, like kids will learn what they need to learn in school. Mm-hmm. For kids who get to go to school or are homeschooled or are educated in some way. I don't feel the, like when people are like, oh, does your son know the letters yet? I'm like, maybe, like he'll get there. Yeah. Like he'll learn them. And like, he does know some letters. And did I teach him those letters? Hell no. The teacher did.
Right.
And I'm not like, I just, what really irks me is when people are so focused on this like educational component. And I get it. Like, of course we all want our kids to succeed. We really do. I want my kid to know his letters. Of course. Mm-hmm. The first time he sang the alphabet, I almost cried, but I was like, why is this hitting me so hard? Like, who cares?
Right.
Like, cause he's going to learn it. And it's a wonderful little milestone. And I do think there's a lot of wonderful learning that can come through school. But I don't think it has to be all about that, because like when I watch TV, sure, sometimes I want to watch a documentary narrated by David Attenborough about climate change and learn something. But other times I just want to watch Storage Wars and like unplug.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like, both are fine.
And right? Yes, and both are fine. And naming that, you know, I make a lot of comparisons to food. And I think especially a lot of like parent, like current generation parents, we are doing our own kind of unlearning and relearning around parenting with food with our own children, because we've kind of seen how growing up, as many of us did, the sort of like 90s and low fat and snack wells and all, and that era, we've seen that maybe that had some downsides that we kind of need to like undo for our own kids. And so we've seen that a lot with things like the division of responsibility model with food and talking about foods having moral neutrality of, you know, there's nothing inherently worse about cookies than broccoli and they're going to do different things for our bodies. That's a very different framing than don't have too many cookies because cookies are bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause
what makes kids also want them more.
Well, of course the scarcity mindset.
My husband's from Germany. And so like growing up, alcohol was just there. It wasn't stigmatized the same way it is in North America. And when I turned 19 in Toronto, we all went nuts. And when he turned whatever age, I think it was 16, did they go nuts? No. It was just like, oh yeah, well, there was a beer at dinner or a beer here or there. It wasn't like, let's go crazy. And I feel like the more you put something on a pedestal, the higher risk there is that your kid is going to just go all in head first in an almost unhealthy way. And, or just not even going in, but feeling, having big feelings around that aren't even, I don't know, like, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Like, necessary? Because there's, like, why?
It's not neutral anymore.
If screens are this big thing, then like that's going to develop feelings for your kid around screens. But if they're just part of life, just like, you know, grocery shopping is part of life, mm-hmm. then it's no big deal. Like, you get a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And like, I feel like it all balances out.
And I like that you made that comparison also with things like alcohol, because anything, you know, anything can be a vice, right? Mm, yes. It doesn't have to just be these sort of like off limits kinds of things, but it's much more about our relationship to the thing than the thing itself, right? Mm-hmm. Food can be a vice. We can have an unhealthy relationship with exercise, mm-hmm. you know, with pretty much anything in our lives, yes. even if the activity itself might seem morally good or neutral. So it's much more about the relationship to the thing than the thing itself. And the comparison with alcohol, and I think, is a really good one, because it's not like we're thinking our kids will never drink.
Yeah.
I think we are still approaching it, assuming that they will. And yet we still like kind of withhold even the information until really late.
Well, abstinence doesn't work.
Right. Either, and we have so much evidence showing us that abstinence doesn't work. But even when we are thinking about providing some education, I think we still sometimes wait really late, because it's like, oh, as soon as I give them the information, it's like there's this message of condoning it. Mm. And we know that's not true for other things. Like, I make the comparison to pools or bikes a lot of like, you know, those things are inherently dangerous to young kids because they don't know how to do them safely. But we would not withhold our kid from going in a pool until they're 14 and then say, oh, you're in the eighth grade. Apparently this is when it's okay for you to be in the pool. Now go get in the pool. Like, we educate them because it's dangerous, because it poses a danger to them, even when they're very young. Mm. So we put them in a pool with a life vest on, and we are within arm's reach so that they can enjoy something, and we can educate them about the potential danger, right?
Like, yes.
Now that my kiddo is older, you know, when we go to the ocean, we're talking about, you know, rip current and tide and all that, because they still pose a danger even to me.
Yeah.
So it's a way, I think, also of being able to talk about those things as they're coming up, so that, you know, the parent who's drinking wine at dinner at a restaurant can have an 11-year-old at the table and still be talking about, like, I'm having one glass of wine because I have to drive home, or here's how I'm making that decision.
Yes.
That's so different than like, oh yeah, we're not going to talk about this because this is for adults. Mm-hmm. And even if I'm drinking in front of someone, I'm still withholding the information. And I think it has sort of the same outcome as then it's like, oh, well, now you've qualified to use this thing. So it's like, we're also saying now you're qualified to make decisions about it. But if we're not educating as we go, sometimes just through modeling or those open conversations, then we're not actually preparing them for the thing. We're kind of putting all of that responsibility on our kid for when they are old enough.
Yeah. And that's a heavy weight to bear.
Yes.
And you talk, let's talk about content for a little while, because in your book, you cite a lot of really interesting data around content. I think there's this classic narrative online about how like the device isn't the problem, it's the content. Mm. And can you walk us through just a little bit? I mean, people should honestly just go read Ash's book, but can you walk us through the high level data about how content impacts children, and how do we navigate that as parents? Like, how scary should we be? Where do we find the data? Because honestly, I think many millennial mothers that like, we just go to Instagram there's a bunch of people on there who definitely don't know what they're talking about. And there are a lot of people who do you, but how do we navigate that?
So there's a couple different ways of like approaching this question, because I think you just spoke to a really important piece, which is that if you're coming from a place of like, I want the right date, like I want the data for one thing, there's a lot of data, and it depends how you read it and which data and how you interpret it and what you're going to do with it. And I mentioned this in the book, but I don't always like talking about the data or getting myopically focused on the data, because it becomes this argument of like, which data is right and who is right with how they talk about it.
Yes.
And I think often that is missing the point, which is kind of like we said earlier, which is that these things are either going to be in our lives, or it is okay for these things to be in our lives. So when it comes to kinds of content, I mean, that could be TV versus computer versus a console versus handheld tablet. That could be content, but it could also be, you know, the type of content, if it's an app versus a show versus user-generated things. All of that, people are going to have their own feelings about, and it's almost impossible to be finding differences, like measurable differences in those things, because especially when you look at like user generated things, that's changing constantly. Like how would you actually kind of investigate that, even saying things like videos on YouTube. Okay, well, there can be some very kind of classic educational, slow, frankly, kind of boring plotting content on YouTube, and there can be trash, right? Yeah, like it's once again trying to pinpoint this giant open thing that could be whatever somebody wants it to be. And that's hard and doesn't help a caregiver, let alone a default caregiver, trying to make all these decisions. One thing that I mention in the book and elsewhere is think about, like, what is something you actually can make a decision about? Like, what's something you have the ability to change if you wanted to? If I know that right now my kid is in a Peppa Pig phase and we're not going anywhere, and like we're all about Peppa Pig, I could read a study that tells me Peppa Pig is the worst TV show for developing brains, but what am I going to do, right? Like, if I know that's the phase we're in and that's not a hill I can die on, then maybe reading that isn't going to help me.
No.
Right? Like, my kid often has screen time while I'm making dinner or someone's making dinner. And if I encountered data that was like the worst time to have screens is right before dinner, you know what? I can't do anything about that right now.
It just, like, adds sort of guilt and right, sort of shame and right, everything.
Right. So in deciding like how we're going to, you know, approach the data that we might see, particularly on social media, and decide how to use that in our kids' lives, I think it's helpful to think about, like, is this something I can reasonably do anything about? Because if it is, okay, then I can think about what can I take from this that might positively impact our family. But if I can't, then as hard as it can be, I think recognizing, like you said, all this is going to do is, this is just going to make me feel bad. Right. Yeah. All it's going to do is make me feel bad. Is that going to benefit my child? No. In fact, it might backfire, because then now I'm going to use this thing that I've been told I should feel bad about, and I might have my own internalized feelings about. I might project back onto my kid. That's not going to benefit anybody. So thinking about what I have control over and what is within my capacity to do anything about. Like, if I have the capacity to reduce our screen time by 10 minutes and someone's telling me I could try it, great. If that's not something I have the capacity for, okay, what can I try instead?
Yeah.
So I'm finding those entry points. I think it's a lot easier to think about what we can do instead of thinking about, like, what do I have to prioritize that will just make life harder for me?
I have two kids, 8, 7, and 9, and they grew up playing Pock Pock. They grew up playing like a bunch of different games on the PlayStation pretty quickly. I liked them playing Minecraft because I could always see like the, like, one of my qualifiers for what I think like this is appropriate content for them is if I could see their little, the wheels turning in their brains. So right now they are really into the shooter games, which I personally did not grow up with. So I had some apprehension about. But instead of just seeing, oh no, this is a shooter, and seeing it as a very surface level thing, I see two things happening. One, I see them thinking about this in very strategic ways, and they are working together. So they are very often getting into a fight over who won or what happened or why did they die, both of them died all of a sudden, and like, and everyone's frustrated. But I can see them working through it, and it's like an opportunity for conflict resolving and everything. On the other hand, it also gives me the opportunity to like talk about all of that stuff at the table, because I feel like at the dinner table afterwards, because I do not feel super happy about them playing that because I did not grow up with that. But I can see why they would enjoy it. So it gives us like a chance to connect. And I remember from my own childhood that like I did not grow up playing any games, but I watched a lot of like the all of the princessy movies and all of the Disney movies. And what that did for me was that it got my creative storytelling gears working. So I was always very inspired to then take what I saw on the TV, do something with that offline. I would get crafty. I would make my own dresses. I would go and play with all of my dolls and or with my cousins and recreate and give my own twist to those stories. And I see my kids now doing the same thing with their content that they are consuming. So on the one hand, they are like, I can see why some people think that there would be downsides to some of the content that kids, and like nothing is as black and white, but like it's only good or it's only bad. But I feel like we are seeing so much of the bad side of gaming, and like every time something happens somewhere that is violent, it's always immediately the video games that are blamed, which is so frustrating to me because I can see the good sides, and I can see what else they are learning from that. Mm-hmm. And I know in your book you talk a lot about like what kids can learn. So can you walk us through that a little bit?
I really like the example that you gave. I feel like, in my experience anyway, a lot of people who might be hearing your example of, you know, they're being strategic, they're making these minute-by-minute decisions, they're evaluating. A lot of people will hear that and go, but they could do that if they were playing outside or playing a board game, mm-hmm. or if they were playing laser tag. And once again, just goes back to show that all of this is interconnected, where it's mm-hmm. like the reason that we would respond that way, or that I think many of us have a part of us that would respond that way, is because we are still demonizing the delivery,
yeah.
right? And saying it's somehow worse or lesser because it's happening on a screen or through a video game. And I think the point that I try to make a lot that is realistic for many people is that these things aren't mutually exclusive. I'm not saying like, oh yeah, they should only ever be practicing strategic thinking through a video game. mm-hmm. No, of course not. But for many kids, that is going to be one of the ways that these things show up in their lives. And I think one of the benefits that comes from being able to see these things more neutrally is that we, as you did, can see those things happening and then can draw the comparison, point it out to our kids, talk about it at the dinner table. Mm-hmm. And we're not doing that to try and justify it necessarily, but we're also able to make it clear to our kids where these overlaps lie.
Yeah.
We get very siloed, I think, in our thinking of thinking like, oh, you know, video games are over here and TV's over here and social media's over here and real life plays over there. But the things that come up, the challenges, the skills, the benefits, they're going to permeate across all those different parts of our lives. And when we can make that clear to our kids, then they are more likely to see it. And I think that's very important to help it make it so that our kids do not become only focused on one thing. Hmm. If a kid thinks the only time I get to be strategic is if we're playing this shooter game, hmm. then that's going to be the only way they know how to meet that need. And then they're going to want to do that every time they want to meet that need. And sometimes when people are worried that a kid is, you know, addicted or obsessed with something, it may be because that's the way they know how to get that feeling. Mm. If they really want to feel connected, if they really want to feel like they're in charge and they can make good decisions, and that's the only way they know how to do that, then that's going to be the only way they seek that. But if we are able to step in and say, you love strategizing with a teammate, you do that in soccer too, when you all are evaluating and, you know, just making the comparison to our kids, they may not realize that. And then it might be a way to show them like, oh, actually, if I'm feeling like I want, this is the feeling I need met, I don't have to just turn to a game. I yeah. can also go play soccer or whatever. You know, we can make those comparisons clear. And that, I think, not only destigmatizes it, but also it kind of reduces it from feeling special,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. It makes it feel like, oh, this is not the only way I can feel this. There are other ways. And it won't always feel as satisfying or as immediate or as dense. But that's also worth talking about, just as we sometimes talk about, you know, I was tired and it was 2 p.m. so I got an extra coffee. That's my short-term solution. My long-term solution is I need to go to bed earlier,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
We can still talk about how these things show up in our lives in different ways. Because again, we want our kids to grow up into adults who can approach these yes. things with, yeah. with different strategies.
Is there something that you really wish all parents knew when it came to navigating screen time?
I start the book with this on purpose and say that the amount of screen time that your child has is not inversely proportional to your worth as a caregiver. You know, like how good you are as a caregiver is not based on how little screen time your child has. If having screens be a part of your child's life, which is inevitable for many of us, if that is something that is allowing you to meet your child's needs or your own needs, then that is still a benefit to your child. And just permission for adults, particularly default caregivers, I want them to have permission to feel like their needs count in this situation, that prioritizing what is best for the family means that we also are thinking about our own needs and not putting those last, because often that will benefit the needs of our kids and the needs of the whole family.
Ash, is there something we can do in it from a practical standpoint to manage the guilt and the shame? Because I think everything that you spoke about today relieves a lot of that for a lot of people. But when it comes to the practicality, like anyone listening who's going to like go home now, and be faced with a decision and is still feeling a little, you know, is there something, is there a reframe? Is there a mantra? Is there anything that you can think of that might help give parents the peace of mind to step outside of the guilt and the shame and the judgment from themselves, frankly, and others about how they navigate screens in their own home?
I wish I had like a pithy one-liner, perhaps. Something I've been thinking about lately, we kind of already talked about, was modeling, how much we are modeling with all the things that we do. And we know that. We know that we're modeling all the time for our kids. But when it comes to things like screens and the kind of leisure or the fun that can come from that, something that I think we don't always think about as much is that we are modeling for our kids the expectation that we're holding for ourselves around how screens should be used. Mm. And so when I think about, we're not raising kids, we're raising future adults, is something I try to think about a lot. And I think about what I want my child to be feeling in their own relationship to technology, but also leisure and responsibility. When they're an adult, I don't want them to feel like their needs or the needs for their, you know, their soul for leisure, like that always has to come last. And I want them to be able to fit that into their life in a sustainable way. So one of the ways that we can do that is finding ways to model that not only in our parenting of our kids, but also for our own selves. If that means that we're verbalizing, like, I've had a long day and I'm tired and spent, and before we go outside to the park, I want to watch a show because I just feel like it'll be fun. That's a way of showing our kids that this fits into our lives. So when we're able to bring in that permission for ourselves, we're also showing our kids that not only do our needs matter, but their future needs matter too. And I think that that's a really powerful way of thinking about it for me, that I want my future kid to know that they're allowed to factor in their needs when they become an adult.
That is so good. It's just like, it's like warming my heart, and I'm thinking about my own family and all of those things too, because we do it in so many other areas. Yeah. I mean, I have a sick kid at home, and my other kid this morning was like, can we play Cars? And I was like, literally lying on the couch, like, I just want to lie here for 5 more minutes because I'm really tired, because I had to take your sister to the doctor 2 nights in a row. And he's 3 and he goes, okay. And then he just started driving on my body with Cars. But I was like, I can participate through that. And that's, I never thought twice about it. Mm-hmm. But if you think about how we model so many other things, I mean, that's the other thing you kind of touched on too, is like, it's almost like having hidden cameras on you the whole time as parents. Like, someone is always watching you and they're always observing. And it's those, not to make people paranoid, but to be mindful that, like, your kids are looking to you to be the example. And something as simple as saying, I want to watch 30 minutes of TV because I think it would be fun. You said that.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's damn, so good. That would be fun. Right. I do want to do that. You know,
but it makes so much, it's weird how much sense it makes when it's said out loud, because I feel like as adults, there's the hustle culture, and we feel like we aren't allowed to relax before anything else is done.
Yes.
And it's so important to just like do something because it's fun and not because like it fits into a schedule or
it's
something.
It's funny too, because this is the age, at least with my son, where he's asking why for everything. And we recently ordered takeout for dinner, and he's like, why did we get this? And I was like, because I'm really tired and I didn't want to cook dinner. And he goes, okay. And it was like, it's so funny because he asks, like, where are we going? Why are we going there? And sometimes lately it's been stuff like, why are we going to a restaurant? Or why am I going to daycare?
Yeah.
And sometimes having that toddler question everything you're doing actually has helped me become so much more clear about why we're making the choices we're making. And it gives me an opportunity to show him and be honest and say, like, honestly, like, I don't want to cook tonight. Do you?
Right. You know, or it's like, oh, we have a busy day and we have 5 appointments and we're fitting this in. It allows us to show make so many things more transparent to our kids, whether that's like the management of a household or the scheduling of a bunch of people's needs.
Yes.
And something that comes up for me too is when we as adults are using devices. Often it's like we're using our phones and we get a lot of pressure of like, don't use your phone in front of your kid. But especially for a lot of default caregivers, there's so much like labor, like domestic labor that happens on phones. Yes. So like the pathologizing of that, I think, is also really tricky because it's like, okay, you've told me that I shouldn't be on my phone when I'm around my kid. So now they're like, I don't know, off playing somewhere. And I'm looking at my phone to like, finalize the grocery order or schedule the dentist appointment or whatever. And I'm now being told I'm supposed to be watching them. You know, it's like all that has to happen. And from the outside, our kid might just see a parent on their phone, but even the naming of what we're doing or the why, I think, is so important of saying, you just said that there's a hole in your shoe. So I'm putting a note in my phone that we have to order you the next size of shoe before I forget. And then I'll go back to playing with you. Or I'm feeling sad or I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm taking 10 minutes to watch something or decompress my brain. These are needs that are going to come up. And there's different ways of meeting them. And sometimes I can say, yeah, I took 5 minutes to look at funny reels and it didn't really work. So now I'm going to go for a walk or I'm going to stretch or it's destigmatizing that and so showing all the ways that, that we can try and meet those needs.
Oh, that's so insightful. I want to talk to you for 20,000 more hours. Right? I think I say that after every podcast, but for real, Ash, like you're so wisdomous and just have so much to share with the world. Thank you. So thank you for being here. For those of you who don't follow Ash, don't walk, run to your phone, which is probably touching your body somewhere, and search at The Gamer Educator on Instagram. And you also have a website and Power On. For those of you watching the video version of this podcast, I'm holding up the book. Power On is what I'm going to call the like parenting Bible of our generation. You heard it here first, everyone. For the next version, you can put my quote on the back.
Love that.
It's so wonderful. Mine is filled with notes and scribbles and folded pages because it just has so much in there that is so easily articulated. Like you do a fantastic job of distilling the facts into something my 3-year-old would understand. It's just a beautiful...
It makes us feel better about ourselves as parents. That is so valuable in this day and age.
If you're feeling guilty or if you're feeling the shame around anything in your parenting, but especially screens, definitely this book will heal a lot of that for you.
I'm really glad to hear that. The last thing we need is like more fear. Like if fear worked, we'd be done, right? Like if fear and guilt were enough to fix all the issues that we face, I think we wouldn't have them anymore. We've tried it. Yeah. I don't think it's working. So I like to say like we can get out with fear and in with empowerment because when people feel empowered, that's kind of the opposite of guilt, right? When I feel like there's something I can do if I want to make a change. So for a family who might be feeling that way or just unsure of what to do in certain situations, I hope that the book can bring you some empowerment.
I mean, it is called Power On. Maybe you should do a V2 called Empower On. Food for thought.
Full of ideas.
Just casually throwing them at you. Anyways, thank you, Ash, for being here. We love you. We appreciate you. This was so great.
Oh, it's so fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, and that's the pod. But please don't go anywhere yet. Don't press any buttons. Before you go, we want to remind you that We're Doing Great is brought to you by PocPoc, an award-winning company reimagining how kids play and learn using technology. If you appreciated this episode, please give us 5 stars so other parents can come find us too. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Come find us on Instagram and TikTok at We're Doing Great Pod. We would love to talk to you and learn from you and just chat and be friends. And until then, don't forget, you're doing great.